On today's Big Picture, we're going to re-air our exclusive interview with legendary fund manager Felix Zuloff back in June on FS Insider, where he provided a comprehensive overview on the current macro outlook, discussing a large number of topics, including Trump, China, the current trade war, a slowing global economy, emerging markets, U.S. dollar, gold, bonds, commodities, and more. So without further ado, here's what Felix Zuloff told listeners back in June, along with a number of interesting forecasts for the remainder of the year, some of which are already playing out.
FS Insider, a premium edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Today's host is Senior Editor Chris Sheridan.
Felix Zuloff, head of Zuloff Asset Management and Zuloff Consulting, joins us today. And Zuloff Consulting provides institutional research and market strategy on the global macro environment. You can also find out more, including Felix's recent webinars and newsletters, by going to felixzuloff.com. That's one word, F-E-L-I-X-Z-U-L-A-U-F.com. Felix, thank you for joining us on the show today. As I understand, you are in Switzerland as we are speaking currently, correct?
That is correct. And thank you very much, Chris, for having me. It's a pleasure.
Pleasure is always ours, Felix. And I think the first thing I want to ask you, I know that you share your time between Switzerland and Europe and also the U.S. The big thing that's been really rattling the markets lately has been the trade conflict between U.S. on the one hand and a number of our trading partners on the other, China in specific. From your perspective, from someone who lives in both places and has a good, I would say, understanding of the mindset that's operating both internationally in reaction to Trump and then also domestically, what is your perspective on what Trump is trying to achieve with, you know, the idea of creating a level playing field in trade? And is this something that is well understood by others, or what are your thoughts?
Well, I think by this time now, they understand what he has in mind. They didn't at the beginning. They thought Trump was just a crazy guy shooting from his hips. But I mean, he does have a point that the Europeans are more protectionist than the U.S. and China is even more protectionist than Europe. And Trump wants to change that to a level playing field because he feels that the U.S. is losing too much growth through its growing trade deficit. And he wants to reduce that trade deficit and is putting pressure on others to either move their manufacturing sites over to the U.S. And something like that to really help him reducing the trade deficit and keep jobs and revenues and earnings and tax money inside the U.S. I think that's understandable. The tactics he's applying is very similar to his tactics he used in the New York real estate market. I mean, basically, in the real estate market, there is a lot of debt involved because it's a leveraged business. And the more debt there is, the more leverage a debtor has on his creditors. And Trump played that to the extreme, then sometimes even beyond. And I think in trade, it's exactly the same. But the biggest importer of the world running the largest trade deficit is the U.S. And the biggest importer has a lot of leverage on the big exporters in the world. And Trump is applying the same tactics. He goes to extremes and may be going beyond extremes. And of course, there are risks that it could break out in a real trade war. That's a problem. But I do believe that Trump has a fairly good chance to get a good deal before midterm election because his timing to really jump on Chinese at this time is really precious because China is in a delicate situation. I respect the Chinese government very highly because they are, I would say, the only government around that has had for long a strategic view and a plan. And I think they were prepared for some trade problems, but probably not to the degree it has come up. And when they retaliated to the first $50 billion type of tariffs, they were actually moderate. I thought they were moderate and they wanted to keep it closer to 35. And they said, well, maybe we go for a second step. So they kept the door open. And obviously, this was not exactly what Trump wanted. Trump wants a deal. And so he said, well, we might go for 200 billion in addition to the first 50. And obviously, as the U.S. Only imports about $160 billion worth from China, that's beyond the retaliation, so to speak. And to make his point clear, he then even added, and if that's not doing what I want, we can double up by another $200 billion. So I think he's putting a lot of pressure on China. And China is slowing down. China has a big problem, which is the corporate sector, the private corporate sector. The private corporate sector has had tremendous growth, but it has taken on a lot of debt. And they are in a sort of a funding crisis because the financial gap of the private sector, the corporate sector in China, is about 20% of GDP. That means to finance their needs, they need an additional new funding of another 20% of the amount of GDP to really keep going. And that's a huge amount. And last year they had those first problems, and the central bank was tightening, so they could not really finance it internally, or it was very difficult because the central bank wanted to slow things in the real estate market, etc. And then the overseas market, the offshore market, helped out. The Chinese corporate sector was borrowing between 200 and 300 billion U.S. dollars in dollar terms through Asian banks. And that helped them. And they sold those dollars and exchanged them for Asian currencies in which they do the business. And that was really the reason why the dollar was much weaker last year than it should have been. And now the lender at the source, which is really the large money center bank, J.P. Morgan in New York, they have realized that their aggressive lending in the interbank market actually through the different banks went to China. So they have tightened the lending standards, and that window is not open anymore. So they have a problem. And the dollar is now going against them because instead of weakening, the dollar is rising. And interest rates are rising on those dollar loans, and therefore they are getting squeezed, and they need a huge amount, 20% of GDP, to close their financing gap. That's the situation they are in. And of course, the central bank could just ease up and help them. They could reduce the reserve requirement ratio, that the banking system that is very extended has more capacity to lend. But if they did so, the currency would weaken, and the weakening renminbi here decisively would really backfire in the trade discussion and dispute they have with the U.S. So the Chinese are somewhat trapped. I think there will be a point in the second half of this year when the Chinese authorities have to make up their mind whether they want to help supporting their currency or whether they want to support their economy, because the economy, with this credit squeeze going on, is slowing down. And I expect the economy to slow down from over 6% to maybe 3 or 4%, something like that, which for China is almost recession-like. And whenever that point comes up, should we support the currency or the economy? Virtually every government goes for supporting the economy and not the currency. So I think eventually the Chinese will let the currency go, which means that the dollar renminbi could really shoot up to 7 or even slightly higher than 7 for the dollar. And you cannot do that without striking a deal first, which includes something on the currency side and discuss that with your major trading partner. So I think eventually the Chinese will come to the U.S. and they will agree to some sort of deal. If they don't, then the whole thing will escalate. And before they get the deal, it may look like it's escalating. So I think we will first have some negative and bearish news that will set the tone in the markets. And after that, we have probably a buying opportunity again for some segments of the market, because the good news will then arrive and the deal is possible, and then you have another rally coming. So I think we really live in interesting times.
We certainly do. And it's interesting because you're talking about how this relates to midterm elections. I mean, this is coming up this November. Trump wants a deal before then so he can say, you know, I've been victorious. I've done what I've set out to do. And if he does that, of course, that's going to be great for him, for the Republican Party come November. So, you know, I mean, it sounds like there's going to be some hardball.
Yes, I think he has to strike a deal by early November or so, the latest. That means he has to increase the pressure to get the deal done by that. And I think that will create havoc in the markets. And I would expect that the U.S. stock market and international stock markets will sell off into a late summer low or something like that. Before you get the good news, you will get bad news. And this is happening against the background of a decline, of a slowing world economy. The world economy is very split. You have the U.S. economy that [S2] Right. [S1] Is supported and accelerating due to the fiscal policy push, and you have virtually the rest of the world that all depend on China, and China slowing pulls everybody down, and the rest of the world is slowing down. And I think you will see corporate earnings estimates being reduced eventually. And the weakest part of all the markets is the emerging market universe. Because if China eventually lets the currency go, let's say 10% or so, that means that other currencies will go at least 10% down, if not more. And that means that you will force bondholders to sell because interest rates go up. And that's no good news for the equity. So I'm bearish the emerging market universe. And that is really the currency, the fixed income market, as well as the equity market.
Felix, how does the U.S. dollar play into these trade negotiations, and especially what you were just talking about with emerging markets? Because the way I see it, I mean, with the dollar rallying, and if it continues to rally, it has rallied fairly strongly in a short period of time over the last 3 months, starting in April. You know, if that dollar rally continues, that gives Trump some leverage and perhaps even a bit more of push on the emerging markets to then come to China and say, hey, you know, we're hurting. You guys need to make a deal with Trump here, because this is impacting our markets. How do you see those things fitting together?
Well, I doubt that the Chinese will listen to the other emerging countries, but I think the dollar will remain strong on a major trend basis probably into next year because of the divergence in terms of the policy mix that we see. We have expansive fiscal policy in the U.S. We have sort of neutral fiscal policy overseas. We have tightening monetary policy in the U.S. We have easy money still in Europe, in Japan, and China probably coming. So based on all that, I think the main trend in the dollar, the main cyclical trend in the dollar, is up. Having said so, I think the first up leg may be close to ending, and there may be a pause, and some may then think this recovery bounce is over. But I think there is more to come. And you have to keep in mind that the dollar is always giving important messages about the state of the world economy. A weak dollar is usually a sign that the world economy is expanding and accelerating, because the economic and credit system by itself creates more and more dollars in an expansionary framework. If it's the opposite and the dollar is stronger, that means the world economy is slowing and is not creating as many dollars as is needed. And therefore, you have a slowdown in the world economy and a stronger dollar. And this is a deterioration of global liquidity. And the deterioration of global liquidity is bearish virtually all asset classes except prime quality bonds. And if you look into prime quality bonds, you know, you have the U.S. Treasuries and you have German Bunds, and obviously German Bunds at 30 basis points for 10 years is not very attractive from a valuation point of view. So you cannot really buy those except for short-term trading. But I think you can buy U.S. Treasuries. And early this year, when everybody thought the world economy would accelerate, I was going the other way. And I said what's ahead is a slowdown of the world economy. And I think bond yields have reached a temporary top, and we'll see rather soft bond yields into later this year, at least, if not longer. So I think for 10-year U.S. Treasuries, you have the low 3% that is capping the bond yields, and you have probably 250 or so on the downside. And I wouldn't be too much concerned about the growing deficit at this time in the U.S., and or budget deficit, I mean, and financing problems or a rising inflation rates, because there are forces from outside the U.S. that are dampening those factors. If currencies outside of the U.S. decline further, you will have import prices for the U.S. going down, not up. And they go into the CPI component with about one-third weighting. So I think this will dampen the CPI rise that you see from domestic factors like full employment and rising wages and things like that. So I wouldn't be concerned. And if you look around when commodity prices go down, when the emerging market universe goes down, when foreign currencies go down, then a rising U.S. dollar and a dampened yield and an attractive yield relative to all others that are of prime quality or perceived prime quality really looks attractive. So I think you can hide for some time in U.S. Treasuries. And for stocks, I think this environment that I am describing from a macro point of view is really not bullish global equities. I think it's leaning bearish global equities. I think the weakest part is emerging markets. The second weakest is probably Europe. The strongest is the U.S. because the capital flow in the world is towards the U.S. and lending support. And the second strongest is probably Japan. But even these strong markets, I think, will have a shakeout that could easily be 10%. And my downside potential that I see, or the lower end of that range, trading range, is 2450 in the S&P, and the upper side is probably 2800. So we are close to the upper side, and we have a good 10% to the downside. And I would, if it shakes out to those levels, that would create a lot of bearish sentiment. It would lead to some panic because it would mean we break the low 2500 that used to be support since early February or January or what it was. And therefore, I think that could create the sentiment environment for a good medium-term bottom from where we rally. But let's get first down. And when you look at the stocks, the value stocks, the cyclical stocks, the defensive stocks, they are not doing well. The cyclical stocks in the U.S. are actually rolling over and they are weakening and they are underperforming, which should not be the case if the recovery was so solid as everybody believes. The consumer discretionary stocks, they are doing okay, but not more than okay. The segment that still does very well is the FANG type of stocks, you know, a bunch of maybe 20 or 30 stocks that are similar to FANG. And I think one after the other is beginning to fade. And you have the leading stocks, the Amazons and the Facebooks and the Microsofts and Alphabet. They are still doing well. And Netflix, they are still doing well. They are at new highs and have and at new relative highs. Which is fine, but I have for all of them, I have short-term sell signals either just in place or pending. And Apple, the other member of that family, has already had its sell signal and is beginning to underperform. So I think that part of the market is probably at risk for a sharp shakeout into late summer. And And when that happens, that would probably be an opportunity, at least for a medium-term trader, to step in and buy them again.
Well, Felix, I want to thank you for going through a lot of the different investment implications that you're looking at relative to the things that we discussed already. One area, or a couple areas, that I think we should touch upon are commodities and gold. I know that these are two areas that you also look at. I do want to note that when we spoke with you, I think it was in December of 2016, you were quite bullish on gold, and your comments were very timely in marking a major bottom in the gold market in years past before we saw a major rally. So a lot of people pay attention to you when it comes to commodities and gold. What are your thoughts on this area, given, you know, some of the strength that we've seen in the dollar, global economic weakness? Are you bullish on these areas or no?
Well, there has been a tremendous pickup of interest in commodities by the investment community. And some of the major investment banks have really pounded the table over the last 6 months or so that this is the new asset class to own, et cetera, et cetera. Early this year, when I started to talk about the coming slowdown in the world economy, or at least outside the U.S., I warned that one should not be too bullish on commodities, because I see the world economy continuing to slow down into late this year. And with that, I think, and particularly driven by China. So with that, I cannot see that commodity prices should go up from here. When you add in that the dollar will be rising, usually a rising dollar doesn't go hand in hand with rising commodity prices. So you have a deteriorating liquidity background for the world. You have a rising dollar, and that is bearish commodities per se. So I'm leaning bearish on commodities. Gold was oversold and still is oversold, and it can have a bounce because sentiment is pretty depressed. But fundamental framework for gold is really not supportive for a really sustainable bull run in gold. I just don't see it. You have relatively benign inflation. You have a strong dollar. You have U.S. Fed tightening. You have deteriorating liquidity. I think inflation will remain tame throughout the world. This is not bullish for gold. On top of that, you have a lot of things going on. In recent years, you had excessive central bank policy expansion. You had trade disputes like our generation hasn't seen forever, and gold just didn't move. It just didn't move. And when an asset class is not doing what it should be doing or is supposed to be doing, it tells you a different story. And I think this is rather bearish for gold. So I think gold is still in a bottoming, multi-year bottoming process, and it could easily fall back to 1050, hit the lows again before this bottoming is over. I think it will just consume a lot more time, and the gold bugs will have a lot to chew over the next few quarters because they are still way too early.
And I want to make a correction. When I said that we spoke with you in late 2016, that was late 2015. Actually, it was December 2015 when you spoke with you on a program, and you were quite bullish on gold at the time. That was a long-term bottom. That's when we saw the major inflection point. So just wanted to make that correction. Then also, when we spoke with you in 2016, that was in August, you discussed how you become neutral and even leaning bearish on gold. That was the top. So I want to just point out that you had, your comments were extremely timely and prescient. And again, when it comes to today, as you just noted, you think gold does have further downside to go, given the global backdrop that you're looking at with shrinking global liquidity, slowing global economy, a rising U.S. dollar. So short term bearish on gold and commodities as well. So if I got that right, Felix, if you wouldn't mind, tell our audience a little bit more about Zuloff Asset Management, Zuloff Consulting, and how our audience can get their hands on your fantastic newsletters.
Well, Zuloff Asset Management is today a family office. I sold the business, the money management business, to my former colleagues and have turned it into my family office. I have passed the official retirement age a while ago, but in this business, you cannot retire. So I think I just run my own money. That's good enough to chew, and the challenge is high enough. We do, however, continue to do our research, and we advise clients in the U.S., overseas, and as well as in Europe on macro matters down to asset allocation. And it's a pleasure to do so because the world is really different from what it used to be in the last few decades. This is a great challenge, and if we can be of help, we do so with pleasure. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Bye, Chris. Take care.
So once again, that was Felix Zuloff at Zuloff Asset Management and Zuloff Consulting. You can find more of his work, including recent webinars and newsletters, at felixzuloff.com. That's spelled FelixZulaf.com. And he is located in Switzerland. And as he noted, Zuloff Consulting advises clients around the world. They have a lot of institutional clients where they provide research and market strategy on the global macro environment. It's always a pleasure to speak with him on our show because, as I noted, I mean, his remarks have been extremely timely in the past, especially on the gold market. As I noted, he marked the bottom in gold December of 2015 when we had him on. That was a major long-term bottom. And then when we had him on, he's not a perma bull on gold. When we had him on in August of 2016, 8 months later, he said, "Hey, I think that the environment has shifted, very cautious now and leaning bearish and looking for some downside." And that was exactly what we saw. So things played out extremely well, or extremely accurate, according to, you know, his comments then. So always a pleasure to speak with Felix. And we also follow his work, his newsletters. Chris Poplava, our chief investment strategist, they exchange views and notes quite a bit when it comes to different indicators and what they're watching. And, you know, just to go over some of the highlights of what Felix said today, one of the key things that we see now with what's rattling markets currently is this trade conflict, of course, between what the Trump administration is trying to achieve in a level playing field when we think about tariffs and protectionist measures from other countries on our exports. You know, what's really trying to be achieved here is a deal before the midterm elections in November. And according to Felix, he thinks there's going to be a bit more pain before we get to a deal. He thinks that Trump is likely going to be able to secure one because China especially is in a disadvantage when we think about their economy. They're slowing. The U.S. is still holding up and outperforming the rest of the world. So again, there's more leverage on Trump's side. He is playing that same negotiation tactics or strategy that he did in the New York real estate market. The more debt, the more leverage. The U.S. is the biggest importer, he said. So we do have more leverage in that case. At least that's Trump's view. So Trump is really going to try to score a deal before those midterm elections so that his party, he himself, come out as the victor. But there's probably going to be a lot of back and forth and more pain playing hardball by both sides until that happens. So he is a bit more cautious on the market short term. As he said, you know, when he looks at the fact that there are some short term sell signals in place or are pending for a number of U.S. stocks, including Apple, he does see that there is some risk for a sharp shakeout into late summer. However, the weakest parts of the globe currently, according to his view, are the emerging markets. And you'll know that this is something we've been discussing on our program for quite some time. Chris Poplava, as well, saying that he thought we were going to continue to see capital flows from emerging markets, given the increase in the dollar, global liquidity, a lot of things that we discussed on today's show, of course. So, you know, emerging markets are currently the weakest. He is short-term bullish on treasuries. He thinks that we have seen a top in yields and that they may weaken, which will be good for bond prices. And U.S. treasuries do serve as a safe haven. He's not bullish on commodities, not bullish on gold. And as well, when we think about the U.S. dollar, he said that he thinks probably looking at a short-term pause, given how fast it had appreciated in such a short amount of time. But he does believe that the U.S. dollar, the primary trend of the U.S. dollar, is bullish moving forward, which will be putting increasing pressure on the emerging market space. So that's a rundown of his views and some of the things that we discussed today. I personally would like to go through this interview and take even further notes on what he said, because Felix Zuloff, if you aren't aware, he was a long-term member of the Barron's Roundtable, along with a number of other leading strategists, some of the most widely followed in the world. So he is a very big name, and his views are extremely worth paying attention to, just given the number of people that he interfaces with, especially large institutions, again, which he provides research and strategy to. If you want to follow him more regularly, you can certainly do so by going to, again, FelixZuloff.com. If you have any questions about what we discuss in today's interview, feel free to email me. If you have any suggestions for further topics or guests, also always love to hear them. You can do so by emailing me at Chris, that's C-R-I-S, at financialsense.com. I'm Chris Sheridan. You're listening to FS Insider.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.